Steve, what else do you know about the big picture today? What should we be looking at economically?
Well, a couple of things. One, GDP came out earlier this morning, and it came in big. It surged nearly 7% last quarter versus the 5.5% that was expected by the experts. And for the year, the economy grew at 5.7%. And that's in real terms, meaning ex inflation. Add in the price gains of inflation, which were about 4% for the year, the way the Commerce Department calculates it, it means the nominal GDP surged nearly 10% last year. Go back last decade, and it was right around 4% for most of the last decade. So the Fed is, without question, looking at, okay, what we can, what are we able to do now to tackle inflation? And also kind of they have some room to be able to try to slow down the economy a little bit without doing any damage to the economy. And that's why they're looking at all these interest rate increases and interest rate increase possibilities right now. Some of the companies like Goldman Sachs are predicting 4, maybe 5 interest rate increases beginning with the March meeting of the Fed. The S&P is, and when you look at this, John, with what impact the threat of interest rates have on Wall Street, you see the NASDAQ is typically the most affected by it because tech companies are most impacted because they need to borrow money in order to keep going.
Sure.
Well, if it costs more to borrow money, they're probably going to slow down on borrowing some of that money, therefore slowing down growth of the companies. And that's why the investors try to look ahead and get ahead of that and start selling off. But the economy, keep in mind, there are two things going on here. There's the economy, and then there's Wall Street. The economy is doing great by all measures.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I was going to ask you that GDP number. That's a good number.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge. So you look at what's happening in Wall Street. I think right now, where are we? The Dow is.
My screen just refreshed. Hold on, I'll get it for you.
Yeah,
you have it.
Yeah, it's up about 9 points. The S&P and the Nasdaq are in negative territory now after being higher. But they're two separate things. It's two separate things, what's happening on Wall Street and also what's happening with us in the economy. The economy, hey, jobs, we've got more jobs available than ever before. There is inflation, but the we've got jobs. The wages have gone up, not keeping up with inflation this past year. But still, things are good on the economic side for the most part.
Steve Alexander has also got an episode of the Business of Food coming up that you'll want to have your number two pencils ready.
Yes,
so
yes.
Be ready to write down some of that.
All right. Chocolate cake day.
Thank you, Steve. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN Radio. Almost 40% of Americans over the age of 65 have knee osteoarthritis. You knew that, right? That tissue wears away, doesn't grow back. Researchers say if you eat 3 to 6 ounces of fish 4 times a week, that can help ease the inflation. Salmon and tuna, good choices for omega-3. Here's another good choice, the Joint Relief Institute. Orland Park, Oakbrook, Northbrook too. They cannot restore the cartilage that you've lost, but they'll put a lubricating gel where it was. Think about that. That's a good idea. And they're expert at this quick non-surgical procedure that your insurance is probably going to cover. So eat smart. Stay as lean and fit as you can and wobble on over to the Joint Relief Institute location near you. Click on jointreliefinstitute.com. Jointreliefinstitute.com. Have you done that yet? Lots of helpful information and testimonials, by the way, of people just like you. So click on jointreliefinstitute.com or call that famous phone number 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET and joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi again, Joan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I got a text earlier today. Hey, John Williams, you've got me hooked on Wordle. I got it in 2 today. My friend Steve Alexander kind of yesterday huffed and puffed and said, people, you don't have to tell us how well you did on Wordle. And for God's sakes, don't tell us what the word is. Are you following this phenomenon at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's taken over Twitter by storm, let alone Twitter. You know, celebrities are doing it. And people, there is a lot of sort of anxiety around accidentally having the word given away, spoiled for people. We've seen that crop up this week.
So what about that? I mean, I like a lot of the things about the way the guy built, Wardle is his last name, built the site. You can only play once a day. The features are sort of counter to the way a lot of platforms work, but I think that's part of its joy, don't you?
Yeah, and I think that's also why it's interesting that you see some, you know, some sort of spoil sports coming in that want to ruin Wordle because of a sort of backlash, like something that's as innocuous as Wordle causing a backlash. It kind of underscores how internet culture really does give microphones to the most extreme ends of things, people who have to post their scores and that annoying people who want to ruin it for everybody. But yeah, in the past week, there was somebody who dug into Wordle's code and found that the answers, you know, basically what words are going to come up in what order as that daily quiz, you can find that in its code. And, you know, that's one thing to find that out and tell people about, but he took a picture, an image of the code so that people that were scrolling through Twitter could see that image and have multiple words that are coming up burned into their brains and not able to get out of them. And then we've also seen people, you know, there was somebody who created a bot that would automatically reply to accounts that posted their score saying, "You think you're great? Here's the word," so that the followers, people that are trying to spoil the joy of Wordle for the rest of the people, even those people in the middle who just want to enjoy it and not share their score and have a nice little word game once a day.
And that's why we can't have nice things, people. That's amazing. I mean, I'm always amazed at the sort of brain power that people have or the hours people have to do the things you just described, those trolls or whatever we want to call them. If they'd put that to good use, we'd cure cancer. You know, it's amazing. To what end? Just to ruin the game for people. There are knockoffs, though, right? I mean, so I can play Wordle all day long. I could do 1,000 words if I just get an app for that, right?
Yeah, there have been on the good side and on the bad side. There's some people have created based on the actual Wordle created by Wordle have created, you know, like an archive version so that if you missed a bunch of the games when Wordle first started, you can go back and play them from the very beginning, one after another. And then there have been on sort of the, you know, darker side of things, people that try to exploit the idea of Wordle as a paid app, you know, using the same name as Wordle, but not providing credit to the person who actually invented it and trying to get people to pay for things with in-app purchases.
The way I do it, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how you know which one is which. I get that question from people, but it's not an app, the original one, is it? It's just a website.
No.
You just click in your browser, Wordle, and Power Game or something like that comes up. It's a UK site, and that's the one you want, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's a website-based application in the sense that it's just a website that you go to. But, of course, people assume anything that's really popular right now, there must be an app for it, and that's where some bad actors are able to sneak in and try to exploit people's interest.
Talk to me about Google. They're being sued over location data. What's happening here?
Yeah, this is the latest in what we've seen is sort of a trend where multiple attorneys general of several states will come together and sue a tech giant over some sort of practice that they would like to see stopped. In this case, Indiana, Texas, Washington State, and Washington, D.C. are suing Google over how it uses location data. There was a AP report in 2018, that found that even if you explicitly tell Google, "Don't record my movements, don't store my location, pause that ability," are still Google applications that take that sort of data, find snapshots of that data, and have it stored. And so these attorneys general are banding together to try to sue Google into stopping that practice.
Neil Young is in the tech news this week because of Joe Rogan and Spotify. Explain that to us.
Right. So Joe Rogan, biggest podcast in the world, signed a $100 million deal with Spotify to only have his podcast on Spotify. But people, including Neil Young, are distressed by COVID misinformation that he and sometimes guests discuss on his podcast. So Neil Young decided to set an ultimatum. It's either Joe Rogan or it's me. And so far, Spotify hasn't done anything to take Joe Rogan off its site. So Neil Young is pulling all his music off of the single most popular music streaming service in the world.
That's an interesting play on his part, because if you ask me to handicap that, God love you, Neil Young, I love your music, but Joe Rogan's going to win. And I suppose that's no shock to him. Now, if everybody followed suit, maybe it would get interesting, but they gave Rogan $100 million, didn't they?
Yeah, $100 million licensing deal. And you're right, yeah, one artist, even one that's like as iconic as Neil Young, that's not going to be enough to get Spotify to budge on this particular podcast, or that it's paid a particularly large amount of money. But it would be interesting to see if that sparks a trend of other artists, you know, if a Taylor Swift or an Adele or a Drake or somebody who is getting listened to, you know, en masse by people at Spotify, if it triggered other people to start taking a stand too, how would Spotify deal with that balance between freedom of expression and the need to police some misinformation and what people see as objectionable content on its platform?
It's not like they're taking him down the way a Twitter or Facebook would if there was, you know, information deemed harmful to the public. That happens all the time. And Rogan puts information out there that is not accurate about COVID-19. That's the thrust of this, right?
Yeah, and it's also the fact that, you know, a lot of these tech platforms sort of like to position themselves as they don't want to be the arbiter of truth. You know, they want to foster this creative freedom, freedom of expression. But when you're in a situation where Spotify has essentially invested $100 million in one person's freedom of expression, is that really an unbiased position? Is that taking a stand? Is that putting yourself saying you are an advocate for what that person is saying? It can come off that way. It certainly puts them in the position where it's difficult for them to adjudicate whether or not what he's saying should be allowed or can't be allowed when they have $100 million stake in it.
Would be easier for them if it wasn't Joe Rogan. I mean, you know,
yeah,
because he does bring a lot of ears to the site. But Spotify is that the most popular music streaming service too?
At least by subscribers. It's definitely the one that has more, as far as we know. Some services don't share that data. Apple Music is one that doesn't share data like that. But as far as we know, Spotify appears to be by far the streaming service that has the most, not only listeners, but also people that are paying to be listeners too.
Yeah, I was just thinking about back in the day when we were paying 99 cents for a song on Apple. And that happened a long time ago, but I sure do remember that. And now you just pay a fee or nothing, and you get unlimited music that you don't capture, but you can listen to as much as you want. SAT tests, tell me what's happening with them.
Yeah, the SATs are going all digital. You can say bye-bye to filling in bubbles. It's going to be administered as a computer-based test at testing centers. It's one of several sort of student, quote-unquote, student-friendly changes that they're making. People can have calculators for the math portion. Reading portions are going to be not quite as long, and the test itself is going to be shortened to 2 hours instead of three.
So then will I go to a testing place, or will I take it from home if it's all digital?
The idea, you know, pandemic notwithstanding, is that, yes, you would go as a student, you would go to a testing center and use a computer in a testing center where, you know, obviously it's less easy to tamper with the technology that you're using. There will be, I imagine, proctors that are making sure people aren't cheating while they're using the test. But it's certainly interesting to see how the test, you know, we're in this trend of college admissions going to sort of a testing optional model. We especially saw a surge of that among college admission offices during the pandemic, that testing wasn't required, purely just to have the test in order to apply to the institution that you want to go to. So it's interesting to see that now the tests sort of have to compete with each other to be the one. If a student is only going to take one test, as the College Board wants it to be the SAT, and that's partly why we're seeing these changes to being more student-friendly.
Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET. Visit CNET.com and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch to hear her reports. Joan, thanks for your help today.
Thanks so much.
Dave and Vicki Massa are the founders of Radon Reduction Systems. Dave's in our studio talking, not singing now. This is Radon Awareness Week and Month, right?
It is, John. It's so cool to be here. Thank you. Especially the EPA has designated January as being National Radon Action Month. The goal is to get the word out there. A lot of people don't know about radon gas.
What is radon gas?
Radon gas is a naturally occurring radioactive gas that occurs in the soil. The source of radon is actually uranium, trace amounts of uranium in the soil. Uranium breaks down into radium. Radium breaks down into radon, and it is the second leading cause of lung cancer.
I did not. I've heard of radon. We've all had our radon tests done in our homes. That leads to lung cancer?
Yeah, what happens is that radon seeps into your home, and it could build up to unsafe levels.
You don't smell it, you don't see it, you wouldn't notice it in any way, would you?
Colorless, odorless, tasteless, and that's why the EPA recommends every homeowner do a test. So you out there listening, please test your home for radon.
Do you get a test periodically, or once you're clear, you're good to go? You don't ever need to test again?
The recommendation from the EPA is to test once every 2 years.
Really?
Even if you have a system in place, John.
A remediation system?
Yes.
I had one in my last house. The current house passed the radon test, and I didn't need to do that. I should get it tested in a couple of years again, huh?
Yeah, and you could do that. In my humble opinion, the state of Illinois is regulated. Hire a state-licensed radon tester, or, you know what, if need be, you could go and get your own.
So the radon penetrates your body and causes cancer in your lungs. That's why we do this, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people, we've been doing it for 30 years, and a lot of folks come up to me and say, cancer, come on, radon, I've never heard of it.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you tell me, since I don't smell it or know it, I think some people think, this isn't a real thing. This is just one of those things I got to do to buy my house, and somebody makes money, and I don't need it. It's not real. What do you say to that?
I say, guys, you know what, sit back in your recliner. Over a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, dig in a little bit. Spend 15 minutes, do some research. You'll probably, at the end of that 15, think, you know what? I should test my house for radon.
And you know what? I think that message is out there. I don't think many people have the attitude I just sort of mouthed there, but I think once upon a time they did. This is a relatively new thing in terms of real estate, isn't it? We didn't used to have radon tests.
Well, you know what? Not to be long-winded, back in 1984, there was a gentleman in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, Stanley Watrous. He was a construction engineer at Limerick Power Plant. He went into the power plant, set off the alarms. Only thing is, there was no atomic fuel in the plant. It was being constructed. They went back to his house, tested for radon, and came up with a level of 2,700 picocuries per liter. All of his family members, it was the equivalent of smoking about 200 packs of cigarettes a day.
So he was radioactive?
He set
the alarms off?
He did, and that's what promoted national attention.
Wow. How do you remediate? Is that the word, remediate? How do you get rid of the radon in a house?
Yeah, then? Actually, mitigation. With us, we're a plumbing family. I'm one of three boys that were plumbers. My dad was a plumber. So what these systems are, they're called active subslab depressurization systems. Basically, it's running some 3-inch PVC pipe, sucking it out from underneath the basement floor or a crawl space, and that gets rid of it. It's easily fixed.
The system I had on the side of my house, somebody had to put one in, and they did, hooray. And then it just like vented it out into the yard or the side yard. Is that spewing then the radon out there? What do you think of that?
All right. You know what? Backing up a little bit, the state of Illinois is arguably the highest regulated state in the country. One of the rules we have to follow is we have to bring our exhaust pipe above the elevation of the highest eave, where it dissipates into the outside air.
And it's okay that way,
though. It is, yeah.
Sufficiently low quantities that in the environment it's okay.
Correct.
Our texters are asking these questions. How much should a radon test cost?
You know what? There is strict protocol as far as placement and location with radon testers. Depending on your house, it might go $150 to $300. We're strictly mitigators. We cannot do both in the state of Illinois. Conflict of interest.
So out the door, the testing and the mitigation, what are we looking at?
Okay, if you have a full basement in the town that you lived in, a tester might charge you about $175, and that's just a guess. We might charge you about $15 to $1,800 for that house.
To get rid of the...
Right. And John, I just wanted to say, in the state of Illinois, we have to guarantee our work. We have to get those levels below 4.0 picocuries per liter.
So if it doesn't work, I come back to you, and you have to keep doing it until it gets right.
I hate getting those phone calls, but it's about one out of 80 homes we do, but sometimes we get challenging homes.
Well, if you do, as long as you get rid of it, I'm okay with that. This question, though, from 630 says, ask if radon testing is necessary when the home is on a cement slab. What if I don't have a basement?
That is an often asked question. Remember, radon is in the soil. A slab on grade home, that slab touches the soil, and there's always an opening. So, yes, it's recommended they do a test.
I guess, yeah, just as surely as I know radon or radium could penetrate just about anything, so too could it penetrate your slab. And it just permeates up through the basement floor then, huh?
Actually, that's what we call a radon myth. Radon cannot penetrate any solid surface.
Like I said, it can't penetrate any solid surface. We all know that.
Well, what happens is, like in a basement situation, cracks in the floor, gravel crawl spaces, sump pit, those are all common entry points for radon.
So you don't pave the problem, though, you vent the problem.
We create blockages, we block those entry points, and then we create this consistent suction like in your old house.
The radon man is here. It's even on his shirt. He's got a theme song. Dave and Vicki Massa are the founders of Radon Reduction Systems. You guys are based in Naperville, right?
The garden spot of the Midwest, ladies and gentlemen, Naperville, Illinois.
So do you just do Naperville service area, or where do you go?
John, for you, I'd come out wherever you are, but we do about a 60, 70-mile radius from Naperville.
Is a lot of people doing this? Is this a competitive field?
John, COVID has made it the busiest year for everyone in this industry. Indoor air quality is hot. It's so white hot right now. People want to know about radon, busiest year ever.
Really? Not that that has anything to do with COVID. I mean, I know we're in our homes more, but it's not a COVID mitigation system.
It's not, but people are forced inside to learn and to work out like you do on maybe your Peloton, and you want to get a radon test to find out if that's healthy air down there.
You don't happen to listen to WGN Radio, do you?
Do you have a Peloton?
I do. I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, you don't know this, but John is a four-time marathon runner, which is very impressive.
And that's four. And by the way, that's four times too many. If you ever get a chance to run a marathon, don't do it. Okay? There's no upside to running a marathon. Your knees will remember it. So train for a marathon. Stay in shape, but don't run a marathon. These are my thoughts. So you can write that down.
Okay.
Well, this is very interesting, Dave. I think I'm going to have you back every January or maybe in March if the show's a little slow.
How about tomorrow?
You're fun to talk to. The website is theradonman.com, theradonman.com.
It is, and I just wanted to say, Vicki, I love you, sweetie. You're the best.
What are you doing now? What is that?
I'm just expressing my love.
To your wife?
My wife.
Promise me that's your wife. You've been married a long time, right?
43 years. Proud of it. Thanks.
TheRadonMan.com, 1244, back into the WGN Radio newsroom. On the Wintrust Business Lunch, we've got another report from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A miss for McDonald's. The company's fourth quarter earnings missed expectations, and supply chain issues and staffing problems weighed down results. McDonald's revenue came in at a little more than $6 billion, with earnings per share of $2.23. Fourth quarter net income topped $1.6 billion, beating the analyst prediction of $1.4 billion. Same-store sales jumped by 7.5%. Service time slowed during the quarter because of staffing problems, and about 1% of stores are operating at reduced hours compared to the 10% back in mid-December. Some good news for the State Street retail corridor. Discount chain Five Below is opening a store at 36 South State. Cranes reports the company has signed a lease for the 14,300 square foot space currently occupied by Blick Art Materials. Blick is moving to another location nearby. The deal offers some hope to State Street landlords crushed by the coronavirus pandemic that a retail revival may be coming. The retail vacancy rate for the Central Loop, which includes State Street, jumped to 26.1% in 2021. It was 14.7% in 2019. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Today is a huge day on our food calendar, Johnny. It is National Chocolate Cake Day. A great reason to celebrate.
Absolutely. You cannot go wrong with a chocolate cake.
And who better to talk about Chocolate Cake Day with than a professional baker?
I am Allie Graney, and I own and run Sweet Allie's Gluten-Free Bakery, along with two other partners.
Allie wasn't in the bakery business. In fact, she had no idea she ever would be.
Not at all. My background is in financial markets. I would have never anticipated doing anything like this.
Until a medical diagnosis.
I was diagnosed, along with my son, of having celiac disease about 15, 16 years ago.
And?
At that point, there was not a lot out there, so I did a lot of baking myself and came up with some recipes that seemed to work well, tested them on my friends and family members, and they said, you should open a business. And so we did.
So if you're among the 100 million or so Americans who are gluten-free and you're looking for a way to treat yourself on Chocolate Cake Day, Sweet Allie's makes it easy.
We do actually have a chocolate cake mix, so that's probably the easiest because it's the cake itself, and then you can top it and frost it and fill it with whatever you'd like.
And if you're baking at home, here are a couple of pro tips from Sweet Allie's. Make sure your oven is up to the task.
Keep an eye on your oven to make sure it's consistent all the way around so you don't have hot spots. And then with the gluten-free, you don't want to overmix.
And cakes without gluten are especially vulnerable to falling, so tread lightly around the kitchen. Sweet Allie's Bakery, it's in Hinsdale, or online at
sweetallies.com, SWEETALIS.com.
You'll find some great gluten-free recipes there, too. And on the WGN Radio website, you can find the recipe for Sweet Allie's Chocolate Cake. Just search for Chocolate Cake. Now, if gluten is not an issue for you, I found a guy who says he hacked the secret Portillo's chocolate cake recipe, and he'll be here with that tomorrow. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy's got some interesting stories, too. Let's start with Rivian. What's the news there, Amy Guth?
Yeah, so, you know, just yesterday we were talking about how GM has pledged a big investment to really try to go after that market share that Tesla has in the electric vehicle space. Of course, here we keep an eye on Rivian because they have their plant in downstate Normal in what used to be the Mitsubishi plant. And there's been a lot of eyes on Rivian because they have all these orders but haven't really started delivering them. They have a big investment from Amazon to deliver some electric vehicle delivery trucks, things like that. But that's still kind of the big question is, are they going to be able to keep up with demand? Are they going to start being able to do that? And they had previously, earlier this month, in fact, closed down their plant because they had a couple of production snags and they had a couple of little issues they needed to make. They said some bug fixes and process improvements. And Bloomberg did some reporting on this about that and talked to some folks who were familiar with Rivian's operations. But they're back open. And so we saw some shares rise earlier today in New York on that news. Of course, you know, a lot of eyes on that electric vehicle space of kind of who's gonna win. At the same time, we see Elon Musk earlier today talking about the importance of keeping his focus on robots and like that look human over vehicles, you know. So I think it's just such a fascinating space to watch. And you know, Rivian is kind of this, in a way, kind of this underdog. It has like all this funding and it's doing all this stuff, but really there's still so much riding on whether or not it's going to get through these supply chain disruptions and issues that have hit other car companies and be able to deliver on all of these pre-orders.
Yeah, Rivian is the company I've heard the most about that I've never seen anything from.
Right.
So
right.
I hope they are successful. Talk to me about rents. We mentioned this yesterday or the day before, speculating that rents are up. You have your eye on that number, don't you?
Yeah, Realtor.com released their monthly rental report, which is always a really interesting piece of information because it kind of tells you a lot about the story of where people are going, what they're doing, what markets are hot, things like that. And so there are some numbers to go along with that. So on average, rent is up about 10.1%. It's higher in 2021 than it was in 2020, growing about five times faster last year than it did in 2020. So that's according to that report. But to put that in terms of like, what is the check you would write? Here's where it starts to get kind of stark. So the National national median rent for a one-bedroom in December was $1,651. That's up 19.3% over the year before. And from there, this report starts to break down by city, which I think is really interesting. We're seeing some cities in Florida that had a huge boost. For example, Miami, the median rent is $2,850. That's 49.8%. So almost 50% up from the year prior. That's a really big jump if you're a renter and suddenly you have to move, you want to move. Moving from one apartment to the next, that can be a really big crunch on your budget. The bright spot, at least for us, kind of a point of pride here in Chicago, is some cities that we saw some affordability being fairly stable, and that's mostly in major cities. Some of the slowest rent price growth that happened, Chicago, top of that list, Boston, New York, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., where we saw really, really tiny growth was from markets that already kind of had a boom. So that's San Jose and San Francisco, where we already saw, you know, so much happening to the housing market there around Silicon Valley as that area grew. We saw about 2.5% decrease from 2020 because that market was already pretty saturated. So we're, for the most part, holding steady here because we did see some recovery in 2021. When we look at that in a monthly way, month over month rent increases did cool a bit in December, but a lot of economists said they were not expecting that to last, really.
I was just going to suggest that another way to look at this would be look at that. All the warm cities, the rents are up, and in the cold cities, the rents are stable. And it may be that a lot of people in Chicago are trying to rent a place in Miami. And so the competition isn't just Miami to Miami, but cold state to warm state, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we saw that in the residential sales sector. We saw a lot of people when they were saying, hey, I don't necessarily have to come into the office in this cold city. I could still get a paycheck from there, but go live somewhere warmer or maybe a smaller city or maybe a place that's less expensive. We did see some home buyers moving to some warmer climates. I mean, the Phoenix, for example, that the Phoenix market really heated up as we were seeing home sale prices really, really boost. So I think that's a kind of an interesting thing to watch as we will see, I'm sure, in the year ahead and the year after, when we look at where did people go when they didn't necessarily have to be back in the office, and when we kind of settle into a new normal from that, I think it will be interesting to see. But you're exactly right. Cold cities kind of held steady. We didn't really see that rent increase like we did in warm cities, which, you know, on weeks like this, when it's very, very cold and we see, you know, sub-zero temperatures, it's kind of understandable why a bunch of people would flock to Miami.
Yeah, go figure. Rents are up in Miami. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, lots of information there. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.